week's address. Commences with an elaborate discussion of Avram's loyalty to the Midah of Chesed, immediately following the Bris Milah. And the Torah narrates in a detailed manner everything that Avram did on the third day of his circumcision. How Avram ran towards the cattle, how he prepared the cattle and the butter and the milk, and how he urged Sarah to be quick in the preparation of the meal for the three men that passed by his tent. Undoubtedly, Avram has been just as loyal to the Midah of Chesed on every other day of his life. Still, the Torah does not narrate in a detailed manner Avram's activities of Chesed. Only in a general way, the Torah tells in this week's Sedra that Avram was dedicated to the midos of Stockholm Mishpat. But as to Avram's dedication to Chesed on the third day of his circumcision, the Torah takes such a great interest that it considers it important to tell every detail. Why is this so? The answer is that Avram's loyalty to Chesed immediately following his circumcision has a bearing upon the mitzvah of Brit Milah and also upon the concept of Ato Bechatonu, as it is represented by the covenant of Milah. Now, the circumcision of Avram marked the conversion of Avram into Yadus. Until the circumcision of Avram, there was no such thing as a Jew. Avram himself was not halachically a Jew until he became circumcised according to the mandate of God. This circumcision marked a segregation of Jewry from the rest of mankind. Still, we find that the Torah conferred the name of Avraham concurrently with the Bris Milah. Now, the change in name from Avram to Avraham implies the concept of universalism. Avraham means that he was an Av Hamoyim Goyim, a father of multitudes of people. At first blush, it appears that the conversion of Avraham and the fulfillment of the Bris Milah represented a contraction, a symptom, rather than an expansion. But this is only because people are not inclined to take cognizance of the fundamental distinction that there is between the general concept of universalism as it prevails among all the nations and the unique concept of universalism as it is conceived among the Jews. In order to understand this, we have to consider the mitzvah of Bris Milah. The mitzvah of this meal, halachically, consists of two aspects, or two kiyumin. First, there is the requirement of krisas ola, of removing the foreskin. Then, there is also the aspect, the kiyum, of atofas dambris. And these two aspects constitute two separate kiyumim. You have all heard of an instrument that is employed by Samri Halim, commonly known as Gomka Klemp. Now, what is wrong halachically with the Gomka Klemp? Insofar as the mitzvah, the requirement of removing the ola is concerned, the Gomka Klemp is as good as any other instrument that was ever used by Mayal. But when one uses the Gomka Klemp, so there is no bleeding at the time that the ola is removed. There is a substantial bleeding before the removal of the ola. And after the removal of the ola, there is also slight bleeding. But at the time, concurrently with the removal of the foreskin, there is no bleeding. This is what disqualifies the Gomka Klemp as an instrument in Mio. Because when a Moyal uses the Gomka Klemp, he fulfills the mitzvah of Mio, but he does not fulfill the other Kiyuma mitzvah, the aspect of Atofas Dambris, because there is no bleeding concurrently with the removal of the foreskin. Now, the removal of the foreskin represents the concept that the world as well as men was created by God in an imperfect form. And this is exactly the reason as to why every man must flunk. Because God created the world and man in an imperfect form. Now, we have a mitzvah in the Torah. Umaltem esolas levaschem. What does it mean? We shall remove the ola, the foreskin of our heart. That doesn't mean that every Jew is to submit to a heart operation. But ola means something that is imperfect. That's all. Now, the foreskin and the organ is an imperfection. According to the Rambam in Meir Nevuchim, circumcision has the effect of reducing the lost potential in a male. And this observation has been confirmed by modern scientists. Now, we all know now that as a result of circumcision, the development of a certain kind of cancer is prevented. That means that the ola is a source of a certain kind of cancer. In other words, the ola represents an imperfection. God created men with an ola. Why did God create men with an ola? Because God did not want men to be created perfect. Then there wouldn't be any purpose in creation. God wanted men to become a partner with him in the upbuilding of the world, as I mentioned so many times. Now, the ola itself represents a moral imperfection, as the Rambam explains it. It represents a physical imperfection. And by removing the ola, we thereby improve upon the creation of God, upon the human organism. Just as man has a physical ola, just as there are certain destructive forces, physically destructive, inhering in man and in the world, so also and even more so, there are moral destructive forces raging within men. Men comes into the world with certain instincts, like any other animal. But that doesn't mean that man is basically evil. These instincts are the source of all evil. But at the same time, man is in a position to sublimate the instincts and to perfect them so that the same instincts, which without sublimation will be the source of all evil, will, through sublimation, through dedication to the commandments of the Torah, become a source of all good. And this is the mitzvah of Umaltem Esolas Levachan. The Rambam says in the Sefer HaMitzvos that this mitzvah is not to be included in the Minyan Tayag because of the fact that it includes in its scope all the mitzvahs of the Torah. Because the mitzvah of Umaltem Esolas Levachan implies that a man should strive to be perfect, to remove the imperfect foreskin that covers the heart of man, that blocks all the sublime emotions that inhere in man. In order to realize that goal, one must first fulfill all the commandments of the Torah. And therefore, it is not to be counted in the Minyan Tayag, because this is one of the klolim of the Rambam, that Dvorim HaTehil and Eskol HaTehil Kulo are not to be included in the Minyan Tayag. This is the first aspect of Milo, Brit Milo. Namely, that man is to counteract the imperfection and the destructive forces that rage within the world. But then the question arises, how can a Jew counteract all these destructive and chaotic forces? So the answer to this question is given by the second aspect, the aspect of Hatofas Dam Bris. Now, halachically, this, as I mentioned, this is a separate and independent kiyum. For example, if a tinik is milad mol, or a gershon is gaya kishu mol, you can't remove the foreskin, you have to be mativ dam bris. What is the aspect of Hatofas Dam Bris represent? Now, obviously, as it is mentioned in the psukim that are recited at the Bris Milah, and as it is mentioned in the brocha that is recited over Milas Geirim, it's not recited in the brocha over Milas Tinok, She'ilmolei dam Hatofas Dam Bris lo niskayim, niskayim u'shomayim voretz, and as we say in the psukim, Vo'ever olayich ve'erich misbeseses bidomayich, that Hatofas Dam Bris represents the concept of sacrifice. Blood. The child must bleed during circumcision. Now, I mentioned in the Hashkofa Sheira Anorach that the consideration for the promise of the Almighty towards Noach as the representative of all of mankind was the suffering of man. Suffering of man is an integral part of life. Before the Mabul, there was no suffering. Man was able to live in a home that had all the four walls, as I mentioned. But this led to a degeneration of man. Because man didn't suffer, because every man was able to live for 600 and 700 years together with his parents and grandparents, with his spouse, and his children and grandchildren. But then, in order to guarantee the survival of mankind, God in his infinite wisdom realized that there must be suffering as an integral part of life. That will prevent the total degeneration of men. Everyone must suffer. There isn't a person whose tent, whose home has all the four walls. One wall must be missing. This is what God showed Eov in the prophetic vision, a sukkah with three walls. So suffering is an element in the covenant that God established with all of mankind. But there is a distinction between the destiny of mankind in its entirety and the destiny of Jewry as a unique nation. True that suffering is an integral part in every man's life, regardless of origin creed, but in the suffering of men. As a human being, there is no commitment coupled with suffering. Every man suffers. A pagan also suffers. But there is no commitment coupled with that suffering. However, in the destiny of the Jewish people, it is not enough that the Jew should suffer. But the Jew is to couple his suffering with commitment. This is what the Pasuk of Ve'ever Olayich Ve'erich Mizbeseses B'domayich Ve'imalach B'domayich Hayi Ve'imalach B'domayich Hayi implies. Now every Jew suffered. And when Hitler ordered that Jews be pushed into the gas chambers, so every Jew, regardless whether he was religious or irreligious, whether he was a saint or an atheist, was pushed in the gas chambers. But the sacrifice of all Jews was not the same. There's a difference between the sacrifice of a Jew who offers a sacrifice not with his own will and the Jew who commits himself to a certain goal. The Jew who lives in accordance with the mandates of the Torah, he offers a sacrifice at will. He bleeds because in order to live as a Jew, one must bleed. There is commitment on his part. The communist, who suffered the same fate as the Hasid, he also offered the same sacrifice, but without any commitment on his part. Now, two brisos were established by God with Avram. One bris was the bris ben Apsorim. The other bris was the bris Milah. The bris ben, the consideration for the bris ben Apsorim was suffering. In addition to the suffering that every man undergoes, a Jew must undergo additional suffering, even if he's an atheist, even if he doesn't believe, even if he challenges and defies the Almighty. He still has to suffer as a Jew. This is the suffering that is implicit in the bris ben Apsorim. As symbolized by the San Roshon and the Lapidesh Asherova ben Akzori Moele. And a Jew cannot escape from the destiny of the Jewish people. No matter what he does, he'll always remain a Jew. But the suffering implicit in the Bris Milah is a suffering coupled with commitment. That suffering is not realized by every Jew, but only by those Jews who are dedicated to God. This is the reason as to why the Torah says, in connection with the Bris Milah, Vakimesias Lisi Beni Vinecho Vinzaracha Achecho Vidarisom Vesimom Lis Lechol Elohim Uzaracha Achecho Vinatati Lechol Zaracha Achecho Is Eretz Midorecho Is Kol Eretz Knaan Lachriz Asilom Voyisi Lohem Lelekim. The promise included in the Bris Milah is a promise of a bilateral contract. You know, there's a bilateral contract and there is a unilateral contract. Bilateral contract implies that every party to the contract must do something. A unilateral contract means that one party promises to do something in return for a certain consideration. But the other party does not have to do anything. The consideration is there. The consideration that Brisbane Absorbing is a consideration of a unilateral contract. And the fulfillment of the promise made in the Bris ben Apsorim of Lizaracho Nasati Esoretz Azuris Min HaMitzrayim Adanor HaGodel Nahapos, that will be realized regardless of the demeanor of the Jews. Whether the Jews will deport themselves in accordance with the Torah, or Jews will make demonstrations against the sanctity of Shabbos, but this promise will be realized anyway because of the consideration of the unilateral contract consideration, the suffering. And that consideration has been given by the Jews, by all Jews, by Orthodox Jews, by atheistic Jews, all kinds of Jews it has been given. And for that reason, God is obligated to comply with his part of the contract. But there are other obligations which stem not from the promise made in the Brit Milah, but from the promise made in the Brit Milah of Yisrohem Elokim. That promise will only be fulfilled if the Jews realize and fulfill their part of the contract. The contract of suffering with commitment, not suffering without commitment. And this establishes the unique identity of the Jewish people, in that Jews, when they suffer with commitment. Non-Jews, when they suffer without commitment. Now, the Brit Milah, which marks the sign, the earmark of a Jew, and this is the test whereby we determine and we distinguish a Jew from a non-Jew. That's the halacha. If a non-Jew wants to become converted, so he must undergo a process of Milah. Why? Because the distinguishing feature of a Jew is suffering with commitment. That's one. That's the aspect of Hatofas Dam Brit. And the other distinguishing feature of a Jew is a dedication towards an improvement of the imperfection that inheres in the world. A Jew is dedicated to these two concepts. First, that the world is imperfect. There is an Olah. There is an Olah as Bosor, and there is an Olah as Aleiv, and there is an Olah as Aleilom. There are certain chaotic forces that rage within the universe, physical and biological and moral forces. And man is in a position to perfect and to counteract these forces. And then a Jew is dedicated to the idea of suffering with commitment. So, it is true that the Brit Milah represented a contraction, a symptom. It marked the beginning of Jewish nationalism, if you want to call it that way. It marked the first segregation in mankind, but a segregation of a different kind, a spiritual segregation. When Avraham became a ger, when Avraham became circumcised, so then the chosen people commenced. But it's the concept of a chosen people based upon a goal and tasks and burdens rather than upon privileges. This is what distinguishes the Jewish nationalism from the nationalism prevailing in other nations. The Jewish nationalism, as symbolized by the Brit Milah, is one that is based upon a dedication to all of mankind. And this is the reason as to why, concurrently with the Brit Milah, Avraham acquired a new name instead of Avraham, which has a local significance. So the name of Avraham, with universal implication, was conferred upon him. Because the Jews are to serve as the nucleus within the mankind, which is to preserve all of mankind. Without a nucleus, which will be dedicated to the concept of suffering with commitment, mankind in its entirety cannot survive. It is for this reason that the Torah commences this week's Sedra with an elaborate discussion of the loyalty of Chesed, of the loyalty of Avraham towards the Midah of Chesed. It is true Avraham had been loyal to the Midah of Chesed throughout the days of his life. But the Torah does not find it necessary to discuss in detail everything that Avraham did in pursuance of this dedication. But it is necessary for the Torah to tell in detail every apparent insignificant vicissitude in Avraham's behavior on the days following the circumcision. because this behavior of Avraham shows that the spiritual segregation of the Jewish people, as marked by the Bris Milah, was one that was coupled with dedication towards all of mankind. Now, what did Avraham do on the third day of circumcision? One, when the pain of the Milah is most acute, as Rashi explains, he decided to sit outside in the heat of the sun, even though he knew that this will only aggravate the pain, so that he will be able to manifest generosity and hospitality towards strangers. And to whom did Avraham try to manifest generosity? Avraham, in his remotest fantasy, could not conceive of angels appearing in human form. But he thought that pagan Arabs were passing by on the road. And Avraham ran toward these apparently pagan Arabs who worshipped the dust of the earth, and he pleaded with them so that they should enter his house and that they should participate in a meal. And Avraham, even though he was occupied with a dialogue with Hashem, so he begged Hashem to forgive him so that he could devote himself toward hospitality. Hospitality towards whom? Hospitality toward Jews who embrace the new faith? No. Hospitality, chesed, towards pagans who worshipped the dust of the earth. Now, this obviously indicates that the tzitzum of the Torah, or Jewish nationalism, is one that goes hand in hand with the most sublime ideals of universalism. Now then, after a discussion of Avraham's chesed towards pagans, the Torah proceeds with a discussion, with a narration of Avraham's concept of justice. Now, Avraham's behavior towards those who appear to be pagans manifested the midah of chesed. But Avraham's remonstrance with God, when Avraham pleaded with God that if he can find 50 tzaddikim, 40 tzaddikim, 30 tzaddikim, 20 tzaddikim, 10 tzaddikim in Sdom, that he should spare all of Sdom, stemmed not from Avraham's sense of chesed, but from Avraham's sense of mishpat. Now, Avraham did not say to God, Cholilu lecho ma'aseis kadovo hazeh, hayim nalekei kol ha'oretz lo yaseh chesed. He didn't say that. But he said, Cholilu lecho ma'aseis kadovo hazeh lihomis tzadikim rosho, vihoyoch ha'tzadik ha'rosho, cholilu lo ha'sheifit kol ha'oretz lo yaseh mishpot. He was pleading for justice, for righteousness. Why couldn't he base his plea on the grounds of chesed? It would have been a much easier case for Avraham to base his plea upon grounds of chesed, because chesed is based upon excessive feeling of generosity. Generosity towards everybody, towards the wicked as well as towards the saint. Apparently, Avraham, in respect to the Anshei's dome, could not resort to chesed, but he had to resort to mishpat, to justice, to righteousness, not to chesed. Why not? The answer is that chesed cannot be applied towards everybody. There are certain people against whom chesed cannot be applied. Can you apply chesed against the Nazis, an application of chesed toward the Nazis would constitute the most brutal form of injustice that one can conceive. Kol hamrachim, kol mishenase rachmon, al ha'arzorim, hareyu arzor al harachmoni. So, Avram could not come forward with the plea of chesed that God should manifest chesed toward the Anshei Sdom. Because if God said that Zakas doing v'ameiro ki robo v'chatosom ki chob dom eid, that men, they don't deserve any chesed. Chesed is based upon the concept of brotherly love. If a person is completely wicked, like the Nazis, there can't be any chesed towards them. How can there be brotherly love towards those who are completely wicked? Ki chob dom eid. But Avram, who was so motivated by chesed, was able to conceive of a mishpat that was also colored by chesed. And on the basis of that mishpat, he could remonstrate with the Almighty on behalf of the Anshei Sdom. Now, I mentioned last year that Mishpat and Tzedek stem from the concept of Bitzalem Elokim Boro Es Adam, from the fact that man was created in the image of God. Hence, man is endowed with certain inalienable rights. Chesed, however, does not stem from the concept of Bitzalem Elokim Boro Es Adam. It stems from love, from the concept of brotherly love. So in order that a person should be required to realize chesed toward another person, that other person must be, in a certain sense and to a certain extent, a brother of his. If he's not a brother of his, then you cannot conceive of chesed. Now, the question arises, if chesed is based upon the concept of brotherly love, then chesed should be realized only to those who are brothers. It could not be realized towards those who are completely wicked, because if they are completely wicked, as the Anshei Sdom war in the judgment of the Almighty, so then they couldn't be brothers with Avram. There couldn't be any chesed. He had to resort to Mishpat. But in respect to those whom Avram considered as pagans, as idol worshippers who bow to the dust of the earth, he did manifest chesed. That means that Avram considered the pagan Arabs as brothers. Are they to be considered as brothers? From the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, it appears. Oh, is this the right time?
No. 11:35.
11:35. Right, fine. So I have the right time. So, from Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, it appears that only Jews are brothers. Because the Mishnah says, Chaviv Odom Shenivro Bitzalem Elokim. Chivo Yiseiro Nidahlei Shenivro Bitzalem Elokim. Then, Chivim Yisrael Shenikroim Bonim Lamoki. Chivo Yiseiro Nidahlehem Shenikri Ubonim Lamoki. So, the first half of the Mishnah speaks in general terms, Chaviv Odom. And the Tesis Yontef says that the right girse, there are two girses, Odom, Chaviv Odom, Chaviv Odom. So he makes the comment that the right girse is Chaviv Odom, because Rav Netam makes a distinction between Odom and Hodom. Odom relates only to Israel, Atem Kolim Odom, Umisilim Kolim Odom, but Hodom has reference to all of men. Asher Yaseh Isom Odom V'chaybem, Asher Yaseh Isom Kanim Levin V'Yisroelim Leinemar, Asher Yaseh Isom Odom, Mikan Shafil Nochi V'Esik Batiru Areyu Kikin Gode. So Amtam makes the distinction. Now here the Torah, the Mishnah says that Chaviv Odom Shemivu B'Tzalom Elokim, and that is true of every man. So it should, so the right Gersi is Chaviv Odom. But then, the next part of the Mishnah states Chvilim Yisroel Shemikroim Bonim Amokim Shenema Bonim Atem Ladishem Alekich. So that implies that only Jews are Bonim Lamokim. And, as the Pasuk says, Bonim Atem, Atem means you. Who? The term you has reference to Jews. Non-Jews are not Bonim. Now, if they are not Bonim, so then it follows that non-Jews are not brothers of Jews. Because the concept of brotherhood of men, according to the Torah, is not a biological concept. Because, first of all, biologically, so we could only be, all men could only be cousins, not brothers. They all descend from Adam and Chavo. And then, the halacha is that a gay or tzaddik is considered a brother as much as a Jew who descends from Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. What is the bond between the Gatzedek and the Jew who descends from Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov? It's not a biological bond, it's a spiritual bond. So the concept of brotherhood is not a biological concept, it is based upon a spiritual bond. What spiritual bond? So the Rambam in Hilchas Matones Anim says that the brotherhood existing between one Jew and another is based upon the fact that all Jews are children of God. He says, the Rambam says in Perek Yud Milchas Matnas Aniyim Aloha Beis, Le'ilom Inogamani Minat Doko Vim Dovo Ra Veloi Hezik Nikla Obishul Av Doko Shenema Avo Iso Vo Yom Aisa Av Doko Sholei Kolam Rachim Rachim Olof Shenema Venosun Rachim Verechmecho Viyabecho Vichol Mishu Arzori Vim Rachim Nishlochu Shul Yichsoi Shin Arzori Es Mitsuyo El Vakum Shenema Arzori Heimo Veloi Rachamu Vichol Yisroel Val Nil Valeim Al Nil Valeim means the Gerim Ki Achim Heim They're all brothers. Why? Shenema Arboni Matem La Vishem Alekichem So the brotherhood of men is based on the fact that they are children of God. Now, what is a brother? Whom do you call brothers? Brothers you call those individuals who have the same parent. That's a brother. Now, all Jews are brothers, not because they all descend from Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, that would make them only cousins. Not brothers, but because so they all have one father, God. Now what does it mean God is a father? How can God have children? The answer is that father in the Torah means a teacher. Vishinantom livonecho elu talmidecho. A disciple, a pupil, is a child. Therefore, a teacher, a rabbi, is a father. Boni matem l'adishem l'kechem, because Jews are required to follow the path of God and to emulate God. This is the basics of Jewish morality, v'orachta bidrov, the emulation of God. In other words, talmidim of God. That makes them children of God. Bonim atem l'adishem l'kechem. If all Jews are children of God, they are talmidim of God, they have one parent, they have one father, so that makes them all into brothers. So the concept of brotherhood is based upon the fact that they are children of God. Now, if Jews are to be considered as the children of God, but not non-Jews, so then they're not brothers. And this is how it appears from the pasuk of Bonim Atem L'Adishem Alekichem. However, there is another pasuk in the Torah from which it appears that the members of other nations are also children of God. And I'm referring to a pasuk in Shmos. Out of Paris. שיאמר עד השם, בני בחיר לישראל, דברים עליך שלח את בי וירדנו. ישראל is my oldest son. If Israel is my oldest son, so that implies that the other nations are the other sons of God. B'ni Freiri Yisrael, B'ni Freiri, my oldest son. If Israel is the oldest son of the Almighty, so that implies that the other nations are also children of God, except that Israel is the oldest one. So, why does the Mishnah say Chvivim Yisroel Shenikoyim Bonim Lamokeim, and why does the Torah itself say Bonim Atem Ladishem Alkeichem, why Atem? Every man is a child of God. So it seems to me that the answer to this apparent contradiction is contained in the few words mentioned by Rabbi Nevadia Sforna on this pasuk, on this expression of Bnei Bechir Yisroel. Now Rabbi Nevadia Sforna's pirush is a remarkable commentary. He is very concise, very brief, but in the few words that he mentions are contained multitudes of thoughts throughout his parish. I heard from Rabbi Chaim Erler, Zichron Livrach, that Rabbi Nevadia Sforna's perush on the Torah is the most profound perush that there is on the Torah. Now, but in order to understand what Rabbi Nevadia Sforna means, you can look it up, but he only mentions a few words. In order to understand those few words, we have to take cognizance of a pasuk in this week's Seder in connection with Hagar and Ishmael. When Avram was forced by God to heed to Hagar's advice, to Sarah's advice, and to send away Ishmael, so the Torah tells us that Hagar, as she was wandering in the desert, and as the water of the bottle was used up, so she cast away the child Ishmael beneath one of the bushes, and she sat at a certain distance, at a distance of a bow shot from the child. Ki omro alered b'meisayolet vateishes mineged vatiso eskelo vateifach. She didn't want to hear the crying of the child, and then God heard the kolana, vat yishma lekim eskolana, vayikro malach lekim el hogor min hashamayim. ויאמר לו מלאך הגר אל תראי כי שם אלוקים אלוקים הנער באשר הוא שם. באשר הוא שם. The expression באשר הוא שם seems to be superfluous. So Chazal say that the angels remonstrated with God, and they said, how can you provide this lad with water? You know that the descendants, the children of this lad, will slay your children, means the Israelites, we thirst. So why should you save this lad? So the Almighty asked the angels, Achshav u'tzadikoy rosho. Now at this moment, is he a righteous person or a wicked person? The angels had to give the answer, Achshav u'tzadik. At this moment, he's righteous, Yishmael. He was a Perodom, alright, but he was still righteous. Perodom doesn't mean a barbarian. Perodom means, as Reb Shimshon Refoil Hirsch points out, because actually, the Torah should have said Odom Pere, because the noun always comes first and then the adjective. Why Pere Odom? Why Pere first and then Odom? So Rav Shimshon for her says that Pere Odom doesn't mean a wild person. Pere Odom means the primitivity of men. Yishmael did not strive to become more and more civilized. Yishmael believed as Gandhi did, that the less he becomes civilized, the better off he is. He represented the primitivity of men. Per Odom. But he was righteous at that moment. So, this is the criterion whereby the Almighty judges men. Ba'asha Rishom. By what a person is now. He doesn't consider the future. The future deeds of the person. He doesn't consider the future deeds of the descendants of the person. Ba'asha jump. And for this reason, the Almighty could not dispossess the Knani until the wickedness and the cruelty was so great that they had to be wiped out. But the Almighty knew that in the long run, they will sink so low that they will have to be wiped out. But until this measure of wickedness was attained by the Knani, so the Almighty could not dispossess them. Yes? In 1 second. Well, Mesir Omer, too, Al-Shim Sofa. But even now, when he's being punished, he's already delinquent. Except that the delinquency is not of such a degree that this in itself should be Mechayev Misa. But you cannot take an innocent person and punish him just because of the future, of what he's going to do.
But he's done the same thing with the Knan, and they were also caught him already.
Caught him, but not so much. Not so much. Well, then, you see, in the Seir Omeira, Chazal say that L'hoyov L'hosit L'yeis, because the Torah encompassed, you see, the law of Ben Seir Omeira with so many requirements that practically it will be impossible for Ben Seir Omeira to be executed, you see. Now, because one of the requirements is, according to one Tanakh, that it should be the same voice and the same appearance, and of course, according to everyone, so the father and the mother have to demand the best punishment. If one of the parents doesn't demand, then he cannot be punished. And you can understand yourself that if the father and the mother both demand that he be put to death, then he must be so delinquent that there is no hope for him. Now, 1 second. Now, So that's the criterion whereby the Almighty punishes a person. Ba'asher husham. And the Almighty will never condemn a person on a prospective basis. Only on the basis of the present. Not on a prospective basis. Now, Rabbi Ovadia Sforn says, that the meaning of Bnei Bechiri Yisrael is Israel is designated as the oldest son. Why is the oldest son? Because there will come a time when all of men will acknowledge the sovereignty of God, as the Novi says. Novi Tzvanya says, "Cause Efich has kol amim sofa bruro v'kri kulam b'shem Hashem ulov di b'shem echot." Now, at that time, so everybody will be the members of all the nations will be pupils of God. They'll all be dedicated to the concept of Alach B'Drochov. They'll all be following the path of God. They'll all acknowledge the sovereignty of God. They'll all be children of God, Talmidim of God. Then they'll all be children of God. But even then, even when this wonderful time will arrive, of course, but Israel will still be distinguished from all the other nations. Because Israel will be the pioneer. He'll be the oldest son. He'll be the one Son of God that paved the way for all the nations of the world. So Israel is designated as Bnei Bechiri Yisrael, as the pioneering son. But there will come a time when all the nations of the world will be children of God. So it seems that there is a distinction between the Midot Teva of God and the Midot Puronios of God. In respect to Puronios, so the criterion whereby Hashem judges a person is Ba'asher Husham, on the basis of the present, not on the basis of the future. Even if God in His infinite wisdom knows that a certain man or the descendants of a certain man will be very wicked, will not have a vestige of goodness in them, but God is not going to condemn and to punish a person on the basis of what he will do or on the basis of what his descendants will do. It must be on the basis of the present. But, one second, in respect to the Midot Toivo, to rewards, then God will take in consideration not only the past and the present, but even the future. And this is one of the Midot Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Erech HaPayim. Hashem Hashem Kil Rachum V'Chanun. Erech HaPayim, what does Erech HaPayim mean? Erech HaPayim means long-suffering, tolerant. That's what Erech HaPayim means, tolerant. But literally, erhapai means what? Erhapai means patient. Patient, long-suffering. In other words, God is patient. He's patient. In other words, if there is hope for men, God will tolerate men. But if there is no hope for men, God will not tolerate men. Why did God destroy mankind through the model? Because God in his infinite wisdom took notice of the fact that there is no hope for this mankind, as I pointed it out. So it cannot be tolerated. Then mankind must be wiped out. But after the Mabul, God took an oath that never again will he destroy mankind in its entirety. Why? Because God took notice of the fact that there is hope for men, that men will ultimately, in spite of all his stumblings, reach his goal. So, in respect to Midot Eivot, to reward, God takes in consideration the future as much as he takes the present into consideration. God does not condemn on the basis of the future, but God credits men on the basis of the future. So this is why the Torah designates Israel as the oldest son, at the same time implying that all the nations, the members of the other nations, are also children of God. In what sense? In the sense of the future. Because of Machiosiblies, because of the unavoidable fulfillment of this prophetic vision of so all the nations of the world are children of God. So from the point of view of the future perfect, you know, there is a future and there is a future perfect. Future perfect means, for example, if I say by noon I will have finished this year. Isn't so, is it? So that's future perfect. That's future perfect. So that means God takes into consideration the future perfect. Because there will be a time when men will have been the children of God. So from that point of view, they can be treated as children of God. If they can be treated as children of God from that point of view, so from that point of view, they can also be treated as brothers of the Jews. Because the concept of brotherhood is based upon the concept of the fatherhood of God. As the Rambam says, Kol Yisrael Achim. Jews are full brothers. Why? Because Jews are children of God on the basis of the present. Non-Jews are not children of God on the basis of the present. Far from it. But on the basis of the future, they are children of God. So they are partial brothers of the Jews. To a certain extent, they are brothers. Now, whenever the Torah mentions the term Ochicho, so Enoch is excluded. Not only an Akum, Akum means a pagan. Even one who observes the Zayim Yisrael is also excluded. But when the Torah mentions Reyeyu, Rabbi Mechaya says in his Perush, then it has reference to non-Jews as well. Except if there is a special posik, which is superfluous, which was intended to exclude an Akum. For example, Kiyite Nishal Reyeyu. So the Reyu is a purpose. Why did the Torah? Kiyitanish! Elechot! Kikesef v'kelim. Why did the Torah say El Reyu? So, it is a purpose, so we exclude Akum. But if the Reyu is not superfluous, so then the Reyu includes Enochi as well. Then the Rabbi Bechai, you'll find the Rabbi Bechai says it in his Perush, on the Posik of Lisan Ederacho Yitzchaka, that it has reference to an Andrew as well. However, Rabbi Nachai points out, if the Torah says Ochicho, so then a Nochri is excluded. Because a non-Jew is not a brother. Because the brotherhood is not a biological concept, it is a spiritual concept. What does Ochicho mean? Ochicho b'teiro v'mitzvos. If there is that spiritual bond of being children of God, pupils of God, a Nochri, on the basis of the present, is not a child of God. He does not follow the path of God. He doesn't even know what the path of God is. So, he's excluded from the term Ochicho. This is what Rabbi Bechaya says. Still, we find in Medrash Rabo, the Medrash Rabo says, in respect to the Posik, Ki Seishiv Be'Ochicho, That's the pasuk. I might have made a mistake in one way. The Medrash says, "Im atod midaber begnusei shalachicha shein Yisrael, l'seif shatod midaber begnusei shalachicha shehu Yisrael." In other words, so the achicha has reference to one who is not Jewish. If someone talks Lashon Hara against a non-Jew, one is not allowed to talk Lashon Hara even against a non-Jew, so we'll end up with talking Lashon Hara against a Jew. So we thus see that the term achicha has reference to a non-Jew as well? Well, the answer is, it all depends how the term achicha is used. Whether it is used achicha in the sense of being a brother on the basis of the present, whenever the Torah uses the term achicha, then it means one who is an ach, who is a child of God on the basis of the present, not on the basis of the future perfect. So, enochi is excluded. This is a klal in reference to the term achicha that is used in the Torah, chamisha chamishateo. But in Levin, achicha can be used in reference to someone who is a brother on the basis of the future perfect. And then, as the Torah itself says, so all the nations are children of God. So, now, in respect to Mishpat, I have to finish now, in respect to Mishpat, the Torah does not make any distinction between a Jew and a non-Jew. Insofar as rights of a person are concerned, so there is no distinction between a Jew and a non-Jew. But the Torah does make a distinction between a Jew and a non-Jew in respect to brotherly love. For example, the mitzvah of Ahavta Racha Kameicha applies to a Jew, not to a non-Jew. That doesn't mean that one is not required to love one who is not Jewish. Rabbi Chaim Vital says in Sefer, in the Shah HaKdusha, ומחויב ישראל לאי וסכול הבריאוס אפילו את הגוי. And he finds it in the expression of אהבת הבריאוס. He doesn't say אהבת ישראל, it says אהבת הבריאוס. But true that one is מחויב to love every man אפילו את הגוי. But what the Torah does not require a Jew to love a non-Jew as much as he loves himself. That degree of love, of loving a person as much as he loves himself, is reserved only for Jews. And to require a Jew to love a non-Jew as much as he loves himself would run counter to human nature. It would lead to hypocrisy. This is what is wrong with the non-Jewish faith. They preach love toward everybody, even toward the enemy. So what did it give rise to? It gave rise to bloodshed. A person cannot love every person as the way he loves himself. It's impossible. There must be a certain bond between individuals so that he could love another individual as much as he loves himself. But there could be some love towards everyone. So the mitzvah of Ahavta Racha Kameicha, that has to be realized only in respect to Jews. Why? Only there is that bond of brotherhood on the basis of the present. So then there can be that degree of brotherly love, of loving one as one loves himself. But members of other nations, so we have to love. Chesed has to be realized, but not to the same extent as chesed has to be realized towards the Jew. Now, Avraham manifested chesed towards those whom he considered as pagans, non-Jews, because these individuals, on the basis of the future perfect, could be treated as his brothers on the basis of the future perfect. But in respect to the Anshi's Deim, God said to him, Zachas Deim Vameiro Kirobo Lachatosim Kichov Demeit. Now God is Merach Apayim. God wouldn't decide to destroy Deim Vameiro if there is any hope for them. So that means that even on the basis of the future perfect, they cannot be considered as brothers. If even on the basis of the future perfect, they cannot be considered as children of God, and consequently as brothers of Avraham, then you cannot resort to the Midah of Chesed, because the Midah of Chesed stems from love. From love. Love is based upon the concept of brotherhood of men. There is brotherhood of men, between all men, even between Jews and non-Jews, but only on the basis of the future perfect. Only there is a hope that in the end they'll all acknowledge the sovereignty of God. But as to the Anshis, Deim Vameo, he could not resort to Chesed. There couldn't be any brotherhood. But he had to resort to Mishpat.